confluence of technology and personality resides a select group of individuals. Those individuals are known as technologists, and they put their thoughts on the line for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of On the Line with Cohesity. My name is Teresa Miller, and I'm a principal technologist at Cohesity. Today, I am joined by a very special guest who knows a ton about cloud. Shane, please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Shane Williams. I'm a cloud solutions architect here at Cohesity. And I spend a bulk of my time with our customers, helping them integrate our cloud solutions to solve problems. So that's what I do.
That's awesome. So I'm really excited to dive into our topic today. These are some that I've seen enterprises struggle with for years. We're going to dive into disaster recovery today. We're going to talk a little bit about VM migration to the cloud, dive into a little bit of dev test as well. And as this all relates to how Cohesity can help. So disaster recovery is our first topic, but I'd like to have you, Shane, put some clarification around disaster recovery versus business continuity. They are not the same. And if you could just provide that level set before we dive in, I think that would be really helpful.
No, absolutely. That's a great idea. There's a lot of confusion in the industry regarding the two. So some clarity right out of the gate. Business continuity that allows for operational consistency in the event of a disaster with no downtime assumptions. So that's more of a business continuity play where you want to ensure that, you know, you stay up and running. Disaster recovery, on the other hand, may be something that goes down like a site, but it also may be corruption or nefarious activity where you have to restore from a point in time and bring that up as fast as possible, where you assign service level agreements to that, right? So what's my RPO, my RTO, recovery point objective, return operation, those kind of things, all those are DR related.
Then in terms of this topic as a whole, let's talk about some of the options we have around, you know, VM failover, failback, disaster recovery as a whole. What can we offer our customers for choices?
Absolutely. We have quite a few, actually. I usually get presented with a requirement from the customer side saying, hey, we want to be able to move our environment over to avoid power outages, let's say, as an example, a disaster avoidance type scenario, or we want to continue operations from a loss of a site where Cohesity is running, or data corruption, or something, you know, malware or some nefarious activity, all of those things where I want to be able to spin things back up somewhere else. And be able to recover my data. And so we have a variety of technologies that support that from our side. So being able to do failover and failback from a Cohesity cluster, where we essentially establish a replication partnership with a, let's say we have an on-premise Cohesity cluster, and we spin up a cloud edition that runs in the cloud natively. And we're replicating all of our protection jobs to that location. So essentially when I go in and configure something, I say, hey, I want to add replication and here's where I want to replicate to and I'm done. And then during that protection job, it replicates all of those protection, all those VMs or whatever I'm protecting to the other Cohesity cluster. So being able to say, hey, I want to replicate that. I have a partnership that I know that's established and I want to basically say, hey, this needs to be failed over, the site's gone. And you'll see when you go into our interface available for failover, and we can fail that over and with whatever workloads that you want. But one of the big advantages above and beyond just that is that being able to just replicate our protection jobs is that we have the ability to incorporate in a failover failback workflow for our customers. So we can say, hey, I have 100 VMs. Let's say that it's VMware. We support Hyper-V as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to protect them, replicate them to the cloud, and then spin them up into, let's say, AWS as instances, as AWS instances. We have the capability to accomplish that. So we can say that, fail them over, spin them up into AWS, run them, whatever changes are committed, and then be able to power them down and fail them back, and then spin them back up as VMware with all the changes applied that were done during the failover interval, essentially. So that failover failback capability is very powerful for a lot of our customers. It allows you to do things like disaster avoidance, which is a very complex endeavor, but we have all the technology that can support that from our perspective. So that's very powerful, being able to do that. Along with the failover failback, you know, we also have like a what we call a DRM book where you can go and add in to build your failover failback methodology. If you want to add some scripting in there, if I want to assign a DNS, there's all of these options to get more granular to have a more effective plan, but not necessarily need to know how to script it. You can drag and drop everything in or add your own scripts if you want, but we make it very simple in the topology of that. And then, you know, those tools together, being able to help facilitate that and that workflow and supporting that workflow into the cloud is a very popular approach from our customer base to be able to adopt that type of technology, just for a variety of reasons, as you can imagine. You know, that's good for on-prem failover failback, but it also applies to within the cloud, replicating back and forth as well. You can accomplish the similar thing, but failover failback disaster avoidance from on-prem is a very powerful technology for a lot of our customers.
I can see why it would be. Some of the situations that I've been in when I've done architecture and deployment and then dealt with some of those unexpected scenarios, you know, you mentioned disaster avoidance. I think sometimes we can plan all we want to, and in being able to control this is important. So let me give you an example. One enterprise I worked in, this is maybe a little bit more, this was a disaster recovery story, in that we were all in the office. It's one of those, you know, 20-story buildings, and our data center's in the same building, and a fire alarm's pulled off while we're in the building, and everyone has to evacuate, and we're trying to figure out if our data center is gonna go down. Like, we don't know what's going on. Well, one of the things we never considered as we started working out our plan was that the way that they lock things down, they weren't allowing anybody out to certain parking structures either. So we actually had nobody to go off site to be able to manage this failover failback element. And so it made me come, you know, as a different perspective, right? You have to do a little bit more planning to make sure you cover all the situations you could be faced with. So I just wanted to share that. I think I'm forcing people to think a little bit differently about how they architect this because of something like that. Like, we're in the building. We expect a disaster to happen while we're offsite, but now we're in the building and we can't get to a parking structure to go offsite to deal with the issue. So in any case, along those lines, I'm going to go ahead and shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about spinning up copies of VMs to the cloud for varying reasons, including migration. What can you add or share on that, Shane?
Well, we do have a couple different methodologies around that. Being able to convert from Hyper-V or VMware into an Azure VM or an AWS instance, we have that technology that's built into our product. One of the versions of that is that we can say, hey, I want to do this at the end of every protection job I run. If I'm, let's say I'm protecting 50 VMs, I want to convert them over into an AWS instance, and I want to have them sit somewhere in an S3 bucket. So in the event that I want to just spin them up and they're already converted, I can do that. That exists. That's called policy-based cloud spin, and we can assign that to protection jobs. What's more common that in my experience that customers use is on-demand cloud spin, essentially just saying, hey, I want to clone these 5 VMs into an AWS instance right now. And you select it, you select your instance, you select the VCP it's going into, the subnet, and you spin them up. The reason why that's so powerful for our customers is because a lot of times our customers are thinking about what the experience will be like with their applications running in the cloud versus on-prem. And it's very difficult to predict the behavior without actually taking them and moving them into the cloud and running them there, right? So your access might be unexpected, or the permissions and the firewall settings might need to be modified. There's a lot of variables that are hard to take into account unless you actually move the application there. So that's probably by far the most common approach, is saying, hey, I want to copy these in there. I want to test them out. And it also helps them develop their DR plan. So if you know what to expect by taking copies of your VMware like VMs and moving them to the cloud and running them there, you can create a DR plan with that information and that data. It's a data-driven type solution, right? So that's really powerful. And being able just to clone them and do that and test them and then incorporate that into my DR plan, and then know that when I do execute my DR plan, I'll know what to expect. I know it's going to work. I know how the application behaves being accessed from the cloud versus on-prem. So extremely powerful tool for DR solution design from my experience.
Yeah, I think I like that, with the way that you can leverage that. It's an approach I've not tried, but I think it is extremely helpful for organizations to be able to predict what their applications are going to do in advance. The other thing that, I mean, I think you touched on this a little bit as well, is the migration element of cloud spin. So being able to predictively spin up those machines in the cloud and prepare them for a migration eliminates the needs for trying to leverage some of the native tool sets these cloud providers have, which can be very time consuming and lengthy to deploy. Plus, it helps you avoid having to purchase any additional third-party tools to help with your migration initiatives to the cloud. So just a couple other benefits that I could think of to add to this conversation.
No, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the motivation for the cloud companies are maintaining the control of the customer data. So they don't want you to use multiple clouds. They want you to stay in the cloud. But us being a company that focuses on customer solutions, that's not always what the customer needs, right? So they are more operate into a hybrid cloud capacity. And in this regard, being able to convert over, convert back, and be more ubiquitous in a cloud approach versus like locked in, and assisting our customers with that is a very nice capability for them.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So let's shift gears to a little bit more on dev test, in terms of, to me, there's a lot of headaches that come with traditional dev tests. So you take test, for example. Test environments usually require additional machines, additional application installs, just to test out something as simple as Windows updates. I've even worked in enterprises where testing meant standing up an isolated environment with Active Directory and the gamut of applications that the environment had to be able to test out various things, isolating it from production. By way of what we do from the Cohesity perspective, the way we do this also can help with development. So I guess my question to you, Shane, is, you know, can you talk a little bit about the power and simplicity of what we can do with just from a simple backup of a virtual machine to create a dev and test environment for our customers?
No, actually, yes, I can talk about that and more. So being able to clone machines for test dev, obviously very powerful from a machine layer, from a virtualization layer, being able to take those and put them somewhere where you have a scalable, elastic capability, where there's no real ceiling in the amount of compute that you can use, right? So if I need to make 100 copies of something in test dev, I can use the cloud to do that. I can cloud spin that and make that happen tomorrow without needing to expand infrastructure. That's very powerful. But we actually have been taking it a step further. One of the big trends that I've noticed from our customer base is not only using it from a hypervisor level and cloning VMs, but being able to clone databases and mount them directly in the cloud is a trend that's growing very, very fast. So as you know, we can mount directly clones of databases on Cohesity. And if we do that in the cloud, we also experience the elasticity of the cloud and be able to do test and dev from a database perspective. So I see a huge growing trend in that area to accommodate test dev as well. So there's a lot of things that we can do just from our architecture, being able to mount things directly, right? So that's powerful.
That is, you know, just for our listeners too, we did cover a little bit on the databases side and some of the other powerful tools that we can help you out there in a podcast that we did on cloud native protection. So that might be another one for you to check out if you are following along with our podcasts. So in any case, I think the dev test element of what we offer is extremely simple. It doesn't require, you know, any kind of heavy lift or additional capital expenditure, right? It's really just borrowing some cloud storage temporarily to do what you need to do, and you can tear it right down or push those changes into the original. So with that, Shane, I love the topic overall, everything we covered here today, but I'd love to hear just any parting thoughts that you might have for our audience before we close things out today.
No, absolutely. The biggest parting thought that I have is the power of Cohesity with dev test. So usually you have an appliance that can do one thing. I can back things up. Well, with us, we can do so much more, right? So being able to do more than just back things up is the heart of dev tests. Being able to use things for dev tests where I can mount things directly and run my dev test jobs on that while it's not being used for backups, being able to open up protocols, you know, NFS object protocols into that data to be used for test dev. There's so many powerful things I can do with Cohesity because I can do more than just back things up. That's really what test dev is all about. And that makes Cohesity an extremely powerful tool for test dev.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shane, for sharing the wealth of knowledge that you have on this topic. Extremely interesting. And that wraps up another episode of On the Line with Cohesity.